Tonight we get Elsie and the son. We had a son just happened to be here during this holiday. After that, he's going back to UK. So we get him to help to light the candle and the incense. After that is Anne. Then Pak Masuri and Brother Teo. Then how many we got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, okay, the six of you come. Yeah. Get a lighter. Yeah, one more lighter there. Yeah, you pass this to your son at the back there. Another down. Yeah. Okay. Okay, come. Yeah. Yeah, Anne. Yeah, Pastor Anne. Yeah. Papa Suri. Yeah. Stephanie would like. Six of you. There? Seven. Papa Suri. That one. Brother. Brother. Stephanie, the incense. Brother, the other. Okay, let us stand, get ready for puja. Then, very song. Come, start with the tray. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Okay, you all can be seated. Then we can start the puja. Okay, let us compose our mind, yeah? Develop the faith, sadha, then we'll commence the puja. Namo Bhinsu Sijya Moni Pho. Namo Milapho. Namo Pusen Pusa. Namo Pusen Pusa. Namo Pusen Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Arahaṃ Sammā Sambuddho Bhagavā. Buddhaṃ Bhagavantaṃ Abhivādhemi. Suakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato sakasango sanghang namami. Okay, you all can be seated, then we will commence the puja chanting. We haven't offered the rest. We rejoice together. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Now we will commence our chanting. Turn to page 1 of the chanting book.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. ปานาติปาตาเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิอาทินาทานาเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิกามิสุมิจาจาราเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิมุสาวาทาเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิสุราเมรายามัจจปมาทัฏฐะเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิ Now we will chant the Padipa Puja offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena dipena tamadang sina diloka dipang sambuddang pujayami tamonudang ganna sambarayutena dupena hang sugang hina.Pujaye pujaniyang thang Puja bhajana muttamang Vanna ganda gunopetang Kusuma santatin Pujayami munindasa Siripada sarorohe Pujemi buddhang kusumenanenaปุณณนามเตนะเชาโหตุโมคังปุปังมิลายติยัตาอิดังเมกายโยตตาวินาสยุนาสบาวังอาดิวาเสทุโนบันเตปานิยังปาริกาปิตังอนุกัมปังอุปาทายะPatiganhatu mutamang Adivasetu no bante Pale parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patiganhatu mutamang Adivasetu no bante Bojana parikapitangAnukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang
Okay, we have finished the puja chanting. Now we will invoke the aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Huh? Turn to page 5, then we will start. Significance of offering of light.May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of clear water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma.That cools and doses off the fire of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits.May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soonest possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body.So that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana, making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of these offerings,
May our spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Sharing of merits and transfer of merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we pay respect mindfully, yeah, to Tripaja. Padang Pajemi. Dhammang Pajemi. Sanghang Pujemi. Okay, you all can be seated. Just relax yourself. Then maintain some of our attention. Then we can start our meditation. But before we start our meditation, I will maybe give you some briefing, because there are one or two new people. I have to explain to you the reason why we do all this puja. Puja are devotional practice that the Buddha recommend for cultivator, for Buddhist, to develop them so that it can benefit you to understand his teaching. The benefits of puja and the significance of puja or devotional practice are very important. And you have to understand them. When we do puja, means like you have weakness. We start off by rejoicing with all the offerings, the special offering that we offer to the Buddha, Bodhisattva, and the Triple Gem. Yeah, you can make your offering. So like now, Sister Susan is offering. We can rejoice together. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And rejoicing means we develop a happy mind. And we develop this happy mind because we can appreciate what people has done. When they are able to develop this generosity to make this offering, we rejoice with their generosity. Then we also rejoice with their sincerity, with their faith, and with whatever wholesomeness that they have done. So rejoicing is one of the meritorious action that you can develop. When you rejoice, your heart open up, there is a lot of joy. You are happy, and you rejoice because you can see wholesomeness, goodness in those who understand. The cultivator, the devotees that have the sincerity, the faith, the generosity, and the kindness to do all this. Then after that, we will start off by paying respect to the Triple Gem. Then we chant the salutation to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. Then we take refuge with the Triple Gem. Then we renew our five precepts. So all these are various type of meritorious action that you can do. Then after that, we rejoice again. Then we start to make aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering, so that it can bring forth the causes and conditions for you to progress along the path of Dhamma, so that you can channel all your merits towards certain direction. Then towards the end, we will have our closing puja. Closing puja, we will mainly do the sharing of merits with the devas. Then we will do the transfer of merits. Then we also at the same time make aspiration. Then we invoke the blessing for our nation. Then sometimes we may even invoke blessing for certain Kayanamita to recover from their sickness or whatever
situation that they encounter. So tonight, maybe remind me, Engbi's mother-in-law, she even though had a successful operation and she is now recuperating, we can still invoke the power of merits for her well-being, for her to recover and recuperate properly, so that she can gain back her normal life, to live the normal life again, so that she can relieve whatever difficulty that she encountered during operation and post-operation. So all these are possible. Then there is also the meditation that we will do after our puja. So now we will start our meditation. Then after our meditation, we will invoke the invitation to all the devas. Then we will again chant the meaning of the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. The what they call first one is salutation to the nine great virtues of Lord Buddha. Then the second one is salutation to the deep meaning of the Buddha Dhamma or the teaching of the Buddha. Then we chant the third one, the third gem, salutation to the Aryan Sangha of the Buddha, reciting the deep meaning of this Aryan Sangha, the enlightened disciples of the Buddha. So all these are very, very meaningful, very wholesome, and it can bring forth a lot of understanding, so that when we cultivate, we understand what refuge is and why we take refuge, and we understand what is the meaning of the great Sammasambuddha, our teacher, original teacher, Sammasambuddha Sakyamuni Buddha. Then we also understand the characteristics of this Dhamma, so that when we cultivate, we will not be misled. We will understand clearly what this Dhamma is. If it does not fulfill the definition that the Buddha has proclaimed under the salutation to the Dhamma, then what you have maybe cultivated is not the real Dhamma. But if it's the real Dhamma, it will match exactly with what the Buddha has defined under the salutation to the Dhamma. Then also, who are the Aryan Sangha? They have all the various virtue that make them different. That's why they have of good conduct, of righteous conduct. Then you also have this wise conduct. Then the last one is dutiful, or they are very responsible of dutiful conduct. So all these enlightened disciples of the Buddha, they are very different. So these are the character that they actually manifest. If you say you have already awakened to the Buddha's teaching or enlightened, but you don't even possess any of the Noble Eightfold Path quality that the Buddha has defined under this salutation to the Sangha, then you need to check, because that is not the real awakening. So all these are the meaning and significance. Okay, now I will teach you how to develop the meditation. For those who already know how to meditate, you can straight away proceed. And for those who may be new, I will teach you a skillful means to actually bring about the peacefulness of mind. Like I explained earlier on in the other talk, if you read up the blue book, the transcript on understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha, there are two or three of them. You will come to understand how this meditation can be developed. The Buddha said, living beings' mind, they are not able to develop the inner peace, inner calmness, or the meditative mind to meditate is because they have mental hindrance. This mental hindrance come about because of their self-delusion, leading to the heedlessness. So the heedless mind with the self delusion think a lot, arise the mental hindrance. These five mental hindrance, they are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor or lethargic mind, then restlessness of mind and doubt. So because of this five mental hindrance, it will hinder your mind from becoming peaceful. So because of that, the Buddha said you must cultivate the opposite five, which he called the spiritual faculties. They are sadda, or confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. Virya is the spiritual zeal or tenacity, the Goethe's way, after you understand who the Buddha is and how wonderful this teaching is. Then after that, the third spiritual faculty is sati or mindfulness, the silent mind before the arising of thought, or awareness before the knowing. So sati is just body and mind as one. When you pay respect, when you bow, your body and your mind move as one. When you are with the moment, you are in sati. When you are without thought, you are in sati. So this one need to be trained, need to be developed. And there are many ways to develop them. So according to the Buddha, these three spiritual faculty, once you have it, the fourth one will develop by itself. But once you stabilize your mindfulness or sati, samadhi will kick in. Samadhi is the collected mind, unwavering mind. The mind is very collected and unwavering, very peaceful, very calm. This mind that has sati and samadhi can see things as they are. That's why they can arise the last spiritual faculty, wisdom. So these five spiritual faculty, they say, according to the Buddha, you have to develop them. That's why you do your puja. Puja can bring about the faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Then through the understanding of who the great Sammasambuddha is, how special and unique he is, a being he is, then you can say during his time when he arrives, he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. And to have him as your teacher and guide, you should have a lot of gratitude towards him and great respect for him. That's why sadda can be established, faith in him. Then after you understand his teaching, you determine to go this way. That's why the second spiritual faculty can come about, virya. Then you will train your mind to develop this meditation, to develop sati leading to samadhi, then heedfulness. Okay, now I will teach you a skillful means to overcome your mental hindrance. So according to the Buddha, if you have not developed the spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance will be there. So very difficult for you to meditate, because as you sit, you find it very difficult to maintain peace. That's why the heedless mind think a lot. The hindrance hinders you from becoming peaceful and mindful. So what we do here is I will teach you a skillful means to decondition the heedless thinking to make you peaceful. We call it the mind sweeping method. Then we combine with loving kindness or metta. Mind sweeping method is very simple. Now I give you instruction. Relax body and mind. Maintain some form of attention. Then check your posture. Make sure you have a straight backbone. Relax body and mind. Completely relax so that there is no stress or tension. Then silence your mind. Close your eye, maintain some form of attention at your forehead. Just feel, don't think. Feel your forehead, feel. Then relax, relax and relax. Wherever there is any tension, any tightness or any stress within your forehead, you relax them all. Feel them all soothingly relax. Then you move your attention down, you sweep from your forehead down to your eye muscle. Feel the same. Relax each and every strand of the facial muscle and your eye muscle. Feel it soothingly. Relax. Then you move down further, sweep down further to all your entire facial muscle. Wherever there is any tension, any tightness, any stress within you, relax them. Then in order to assist you to relax, you can visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. When you can smile, you naturally relax. Because there is joy, there is happiness. Then you can recite, following what I recite. You can radiate love to yourself. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. You must feel the well-being and happiness within your own form and mind. Each and every cells within your own body, feel it soothingly relaxed and having this well-being and happiness. Then you can continue to radiate. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. May it too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. Free from all harm and danger. You must feel it. Then may it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within our hearts. Then you can continue radiate this loving kindness to your loved one. May my loved ones, may be my parents, my brothers and sisters, my good friends, my other family members or loved one that I hold on to dearly, may they all too be well, happy and peaceful. You can visualize them, then radiate this kind thought and loving kindness to them. May my loved ones too be well, happy and peaceful. May they all too be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May their mind states to be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we extend this metta or loving kindness to all beings. May all beings within this vicinity of ancestors, known and unknown, seen and unseen, and all Dhamma friends, co-cultivator and meditator, be well, happy and peaceful. May they all too be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful. And may they all too be free from all form of suffering, both physical and mental suffering. Free from all harm and danger. May they all too be well, happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then now we will extend our loving kindness to all beings. May all beings within the entire of SS2, Petaling Jaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, Mother Earth, so our solar system, leading to our galaxy, our Milky Way, and the entire universe. May all beings within the entire universe or existence, may they all too be well, happy and peaceful. May their mind states to be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful. May they too be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. Then you can come back to your facial muscle, feel relaxed. Then you move it down to your neck, feel relaxed. Shoulder, feel relaxed. Hand, feel relaxed. Back to shoulder, feel relaxed. Then you move your attention down to your heart or chest area. This is a very important location. This is where your heartbeat arises and passes away. This is where your life force arises and passes away. This is also the seat of consciousness. You just relax everything, silence everything, and just feel. You can feel your heartbeat or any vibration. Then you silence your mind completely and just stay there. If you are new, not sensitive, then it's okay. You just feel your heart area like you feel your forehead. If you can detect any tension, any tightness or any stress with it, then you just relax, relax and relax. Feel it soothingly, relax. Then you move on to your stomach, feel, relax. Abdomen again, silence everything, feel, relax. Then buttock, leg, feel, relax. Then you can reverse this whole mind sweeping method from the leg. You feel, relax, buttock, feel, relax. Then abdomen, feel, relax. Stomach, do the same. Then come back to your heart area, silence everything and feel. Just feel. Then relax and move on to your shoulder, hand back to shoulder, neck, feel, relax, facial muscle, eye muscle, forehead. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. And that is your silent mind, your meditative mind. So you need to stabilize this mind. We call it sati or mindfulness. When the mind is silent without thought, it is in sati. So this one need to be stabilized. So according to the Buddha, if you don't have any stability in training this silent mind or the mind that is in sati, you need to stabilize it by using a skillful means, either a meditation object or a method or a technique that you are familiar with to anchor this mind so that it is mindful of the object of meditation. The Buddha recommended anapanasati, which is mindfulness of the in and out breath. Anapana is in and out breath, sati is mindfulness. So when you can silence your mind completely and just feel your heart, your breathing. Just like you feel your forehead, now you feel your breathing. The moment you detect the breath, then you follow the instruction of the Buddha. Breathing in, the mind is aware. Breathing out, the mind is aware. So when your awareness and the breath move as one without thought, and that is sati, that is anapanasati. So you train your mind this way. Maintain awareness in front of the nostril, then follow the breathing. When you detect the breathing, allow the mind, the awareness to follow. Then be patient. Every time this mind wanders off, if you are not familiar, if you are new, it will happen very often. But don't worry, be patient. Every time it wanders off, bring it back. Wanders off, bring it back. Means come back to the attention in front of your nostril. Then you train this mind again. As you train, it will become more and more easy, more and more stable. Then as this settles down, your anapanasati will start to develop. The mindfulness of the in and out breath will become more and more stable, more and more stable. Then after a while, you will experience a type of peace they call piti. Piti is spiritual joy, spiritual calmness. Or sometimes they call spiritual rapture, where you feel very good, very peaceful, very calm. Then as you continue to relax into it and silence everything, this piti will transform and become even more refined. Then it will stabilize and become sukha. Sukha is a blissful state of mind, more peaceful than piti, and it is more subtle, more refined. Then when you continue to experience it and relax into it, this very fine sukha will still transform and become pasati. Pasati is the tranquility mind, tranquility state of mind, the silent mind, the peaceful mind, the awareness, the meditative mind. So we continue to relax and allow this sukha to develop. Then after you have relaxed enough, the mind becomes very quiet, very peaceful, like no more movement. Then it will hit pasati. Pasati is tranquility or stillness of mind, the silent mind without thought. When you reach this stage, means you have developed the meditation quite well. This is the final mind that you need to develop. This is the meditative state. Then your mind will be very quiet, very peaceful and just still. Then you silent everything. And this silent mind, you can anchor it to your object of meditation if you want to. Then later on, you can even anchor it to your heartbeat, no? Any vibration within your kaya. Then as you stabilize this, one day you will come to know your breathing will become very subtle until like no more breathing. Then whatever object of meditation you are using, that one also become very subtle. Then when it becomes that, means the mind itself is in sati. Technically, you don't need an object of meditation to anchor your mind anymore. So this mind that is in sati is already mindful. It can meditate, it can be aware of whatever that arises and pass away. So silence your mind and allow it to be. Then develop the meditation accordingly. Okay, I will allow you to continue with the meditation. And in about 10 minutes, I will ring the bell. for those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have now, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind states that you must develop or train so that it can help you in your meditation. The mind that is trained is heedful, no longer heedless. It will listen to you. The mind sweeping method also trains you to develop the ability to keep the mind at the location you want it to be. You want it to be at the forehead, it stay there. You want it to be at the heart, it stay there. So the mind that is trained listen to you. You want it to be silent, aware, it will just do that. Not like the normal mind before you train, it think a lot, heedless. You want to be peaceful, it just will not listen to you. So that is the untrained mind. The untrained mind is deluded. And because of that, the mental hindrance are there. That's why it hinders you from becoming peaceful and aware within. So we need to train this mind, the thinking mind, the heedless mundane mind. The reason being the spiritual faculties are not there. But when the spiritual faculties are there, technically you don't need to train. The moment you relax, silence it, the mind is already peaceful in the meditative state. That's why when the mind is trained, it listens to you. You want it to be relaxed, aware and silent, it will just do that. Then it will stay there. It's just like badminton, when you are skillful. You can decide where you want to return the shuttlecock. Surf low, it go low. Surf high, it go high. You want to return baseline, it will go there. Means you are skillful. You can decide where you want to return the shuttlecock. That's why you have the training, the skill. The mind is the same. So before you train, you cannot do it. It's just like badminton when you first start to play. You can't even hold the racket properly. Then when you try to serve, you can't even hit the shuttlecock accordingly. So basically, the similarity is before you train, you are very clumsy. You cannot execute the what they call skillfulness or the refined stroke that you already developed through your training. When you have trained properly, you become very skillful, very graceful. You can execute the shot very nicely. It's spontaneous, you just flick, you will go. But when you are not skillful, you cannot. So in a similar way, our mind is the same. So this is just to elaborate, because there are one or two who are new. Okay, now we turn to page 6, where we will develop the chanting. Page 6 is invocation to the devas. I will read you the English version. Then after that, we will chant the Pali. Pass the mic to Engvi. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in the entirety, let the dainties or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching.
Samanta Chakravalisu Achagatantu Devata Sadhammam Munirajasa Sunantu Saggamokkhadam Dhammasavanakalo Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta
Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho Vijacarana sampanno sugato lokavidu Nutaro purisa dhammasa Sattha deva manusana Do bhagavati Svakato bhagavata dhammo Sandittiko akaliko Ehipasiko opanayiko Pachatang veditabu vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato savakasango Ujupatipanno bhagavato savakasango Nyaya patipanno bhagavato savaka sangho Samichi patipanno bhagavato savaka sangho Yatidang chattari purisa yukani Atha purisa pugala Isa bhagavato savaka sangho Ahuneyo pahuneyo Dakineyo anjali karaneyo Anuttarang punyaketang lokasati Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu Okay, now pay respect mindfully to Triple Gem. Bedang pejemi Damang pejemi Sanghang pejemi Okay. You can be seated. Then turn to page 72, Chapter 9 of the Diamond Sutta. We will continue from there. We will start off by reading the sutta. Subhati, what do you think? Can a Sotapan have the thought that I have obtained the fruit of Sotapanna? Subhati said, no, world-honored one. And why? A Sotapan means one who has entered the path or the flow, and yet he has not entered anything. He has not entered form, sound, smell, taste, tangible objects, or mental construct. For that reason, he is called a Sotapan.
So this is the Shenhua's version. Huh? We will read the other one from the other version. I will read to you. Chapter 9. Buddha then asked, "What do you think, Subhati? Does one who has entered the stream which flows to enlightenment say, 'I have entered the stream'?" Subhati answered, he said, "No, Buddha. A true disciple entering the stream would not think of themselves as a separate person that could be entering anything. Only that disciple who does not differentiate themselves from others, who has no regard for name, shape, form, sound, odor, taste, tactile, or any quality, can truly be called a disciple who has entered the stream." Then the Buddha continued, "Thus a disciple who is subject to only one more rebirth said to himself, 'I am entitled to the honor and rewards of a one returner. No, Lord, the one's returner is only a name. There is no passing away or coming into existence. Only one who realizes this can really be called a disciple.' Then Subhati, does a venerable one who will never more be reborn as a mortal say to himself, 'I am entitled to the honor and reward of a non-returner'? No, perfectly enlightened one, a non-returner is merely a name. There is actually no one returning and no one not returning. Tell me, Subhati, does a Buddha say to himself, 'If I obtain perfect enlightenment,'" "Does a Buddha say to himself, 'I have obtained perfect enlightenment'? No, Lord, there is no such thing as perfect enlightenment to obtain. If a perfectly enlightened Buddha were to say to himself, 'I am enlightened,' he would be admitting that there is an individual person, a separate self and personality, and would therefore not be perfectly enlightened." Subhati then said, "Most honored one, you have said that I, Subhati, excel among thy disciples in knowing the bliss of enlightenment, in being perfectly content in seclusion, and in being free from all passion. Yet I do not say to myself that I am so, for if I ever thought I myself as such, then it would not be true that I escape ego delusion." See, self-delusion. Eh? "I know that in truth there is no Subhati, and therefore Subhati abides nowhere, that he neither knows, nor does he not know bliss, and that he is neither free from nor enslaved by his passion." So this is the full version. Eh? The Shenhua's version, I think they break it into many parts. Eh? You turn to the next page onward, you will see. Eh? So more or less it's the same. So what we are trying to develop here is, according to the Buddha, chapter 9, the title is, the one mark is not even a mark. It's no mark. So if there is a mark of a self cultivating, then that is not the cultivation that can lead to real enlightenment. Yeah. That's why under this sutta is very clear. The Buddha started off by asking Subhati, "Can a Sotapan have a thought that he is a Sotapan, that he has entered the stream?" So this is a very important chapter within the Diamond Sutta. Then the way Subhati answered, you will understand. Even a Sotapan cannot have that idea. What more the Sakadagami, Anangami, Arahan, and the Bodhisattva, and all the other well-cultivated beings. That's why the real penetration of the Dhamma, the real awakening, is not what people think. There is no one to be enlightened. So here they are trying to explain it using words. That's why you read the sutta, huh? It's like not easy to comprehend because they use word neither this nor that. Huh? Then, of course, you say it will contradict the idea of having a person, a personality, ego delusion not rooted out and all those things. Mm. So the deep meaning is actually like what I have explained to you all last time. Because this so-called human being, or what the Buddha called the five aggregates of form and mind, the two aspects. Can you remember the two aspects? First aspect is what? First aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind is what? As a human being or a living being. So this is the first aspect because we have a physical body, then we have a consciousness trapped inside. So the aggregate of mind within the consciousness is the four aggregate of feeling, perception, activity of mind or sankhara and consciousness. Then the physical body is the fifth aggregate. That's why we have the first aspect as a human being or a living being, the five aggregate of form and mind. Then the second aspect is within the mind, within the consciousness. Every moment of consciousness, when we arise a seeing consciousness, hearing, smell, taste, tactile or thought consciousness, we already have the four aggregate of mind within feeling, perception, activity of mind, mental states and consciousness. Then the mental form, how does it enter the mind? It enters the mind through mental perception, the aggregate of perception, where you perceive it. That's why the external form enters the mind. So every moment of sense experience, there is also the five mental aggregates of form and mind. And that is the second aspect. And that is what the Buddha is interested in under the teaching, the dependent origination. So according to the Buddha, these five aggregates of form and mind, they have the universal characteristics of impermanent. You grasp, cling and hold, one thing's your way, which is not in accordance with nature's way, because everything follow nature's law, like the Buddha said. They are dependent originating, condition arising. When condition like that, it will be like that. So when the condition is there, the phenomena will arise. When condition continue to exist, it will sustain itself. Then you say, exist. And when condition cease to be, it will cease to be. So because of that, the Buddha said, these five aggregates of form and mind, they are not what you think. If you grasp, cling and hold, thinking that it's you, a permanent unchanging entity, then you are afflicted. You become deluded by it. So condition arising thing is not a permanent unchanging entity. You cannot say this is I, this is me, therefore all this can be me. This is a delusion. So that's why this five aggregate of form and mind is karmically conditioned out for us to use to live life. And this one is not us because it's dependent originating, condition arising, impermanent, leading to suffering, goes the way of nature. And we had already gone through earlier on. We analyzed all the aggregate as per Anatta Lakkhana Sutta and also our own meditative experience. All the aggregates, they go the way of nature. They have this universal characteristic. They arise and they pass away and you are still there. Means they are not you. If they are you, when they pass away, you should die or you should disappear. So all these are very clear. So what the Buddha meant is, there is a human being that realized the enlightenment, but the human being is not you, because that one is impermanent, condition arising, cause of now. It's just a segmented form of mind, karmically conditioned out for the nature to arise into this universe, to live life, to experience all of the whatever condition within life, then to cultivate, to perfect, and to experience existence. So this one, if you can see clearly within the meditation and realize that it's not you, then that self-delusion is gone, sakkaya ditthi is gone. That's why when the form am I awakened because it's connected to this wisdom. It will not be deluded. It will not say, I am a Sotapan, I am enlightened, no such thing. Because that one is not him, you know. That one is just a form and mind, condition arising, cause of phenomena, impermanent. It will disperse, it will go the way of nature. And this one they couldn't explain, I don't know why. They always use word. So anyway, we will go through and see what the commentary is, what Shenhua has to say. Okay, turn to page 72. Commentary. Knowing that most people would still not have understood the doctrine of real mark prajna, Sakyamuni Buddha presented another example. A Sotapan is the first stage arahant. Not a first stage arahant, it's a first stage of sainthood. There are four stages of sainthood that you go through. The first stage of sainthood is called a Sotapan. A Sotapan is a being that has severed three of the ten fetters. The first three, the first one is self-delusion, sakkayaditti. Then the second one is the faith in the triple jam is unshakable. Then the third one is rites and ritual, which is a delusion, is no more there. So these are the first three fetters. When you can meditate and realize this understanding or this wisdom, this insight into the phenomenal world, to see clearly their universal characteristics of impermanence leading to suffering and non-self or empty nature. The moment you realize this, sakkayaditti, self-delusion, will be severed. Then when self-delusion is severed, your faith in the triple gem will be very strong. It will become unshakable. You will no longer have any doubt. So the doubt about the teaching, the doubt about enlightenment, the doubt about whether the Buddha exists or he don't exist is no more, because that one becomes unshakable. Then the rites and ritual means when people tell you after you die you become what and what and what, you must do what and what and what, you will laugh at that person, but that person don't understand because this one is not real, this one is not you. So die already means consciousness separate from the form. And the consciousness is just a random of consciousness. So consciousness itself is energy. It will finally disperse. So all this, they will not be deceived. That's why they will not hold on to rite and ritual. They will not go and ask medium, agree, you do all this for me, I pay you, and all this thing. Then when somebody pass away or die, they tell you, you want to help them improve their life so that they will not be born in the hell or the willful state. They say, you pay them, they do certain thing for you, then it can help them. The enlightened being, even a Sotapan, they will not have this delusion anymore. Then the next two factor is more difficult. Sensual desire and ill will. When you reach the second stage of sainthood, so Sakadagami, you only attenuate or reduce the sensual desire and ill will, means this evil root of greed and hatred, you can only attenuate it. That is already very, very powerful. You have progressed. That's why a Sotapan can still have sensual desire and ill will. He can still get angry. It's only when you realize Sakadagami that you are more controlled, attenuated. You will not so easily get irritated or attached to all the sensual things, the clinging, the grasping, and the reaction to sense experience. It gets attenuated. But when you realize the third stage of sainthood, which is anagami, then these two factors get rooted out. Means there is no more greed and hatred, no more what they call sensual desire and ill will. But then at that stage, it still got five more fetters to clear. And these five fetters, they are very powerful. You only clear them when you realize arahantship, when the whole of ignorance is rooted out. And the next five, they are attachment to form jhana and formless jhana. These are the six and seven. Then you have this, what they call minor conceit. Minor conceit is a very powerful fetter. They call it mana, minor conceit. You still think, oh, I am already a Sotapan. I am already a Sakadami, Anagami. These people are still deluded. So that subtle conceit sometimes can arise. Sometimes can arise. Because they have this thought, and the thought can arise this type of thing. But actually deep within, because as a Sotapan you will know, this form of mind is not you. But the thought is still very powerful. That's why even at the Arahant level, if you have not reached the cessation that is very stable, your mundane mind has not collapsed, they call it Arahant with residue or outflow. There is still the birth and death of your thought, outflow of thought, but they are not deluded by this thought anymore. That's why the thought can arise and pass away and arise all those things, but they are not deluded by it. But it's still, the outflow is still there. So that's why it is not what you think. So even at that level, minor conceit as an anagami, you still have. Then for no reason sometimes, your mind can still be restless even at anagami level. Not until when the last fetter, avijja, is completely rooted out. Then all the five fetters are gone. Then you become an arahant. At that time, you would have gone through the real cessation, not a glimpse, very stable cessation. Then you realize what the form of mind realize what nibbana is all about. Then from then on, that mind is so different. The minor conceit, the restlessness all rooted out. Then avijja also rooted out. That's why there is no rebirth consciousness. Because the last thought moment, they will not be deceived. No matter what happened at the moment of death, even the physical body, very, very miserable or what, they will not be afflicted. Because they know these are all aggregate, sankhara, no reality. So, all these are already in the Theravada teaching. So, if you have develop the understanding, you will understand. Then this is where Chen Hua tried to explain. But he used a different word. He said, a Sotapan is a first stage arahant. Arahant is an arahant. Where got first stage, second stage arahant? No, it's the first stage of sainthood. Then certification to the first fruit of arahantship. This one may be more appropriate. First fruit of maybe becoming an arahant later on, which is within the small vehicle of Theravada tradition, comes when the 88 category of view delusion are smashed. So these are wrong view. But the more powerful one is self-delusion. It is called the position of the way of seeing. By means of the 16 minds, one can cut out the 88 category of view delusion and certify to the truth. So this one is based on their Mahayana teaching. They got 88 type of wrong views. I think the Brahmanet Sutta also got described all this wrong view. But to me, not important. Because this one is a lot of word. More important is to penetrate self-delusion. That this five aggregate of form in mind is not you. The moment you clear this and you insight into the characteristics of nature, all the 88 or 100 or 200 or 1000 or wrong view no longer exists. It will just cease. Because you will have the ability to understand truth. View delusion are the result of greed and love which arise when viewing situation, means you perceive things through your delusion. Before one sees something, one has no greed and love concerning it. But once the thing is seen, greed and love for it arise. The production of greed and love regarding states is termed view delusion. So this is wrong perception. The 88 category of view delusion are cut off by means of 16 states of mind, which are aspects of the Four Noble Truths of suffering. They call it accumulation. We call it the cause of arising of suffering. That's why here they use the word suffering, dukkha. Then they use accumulation, kuji. Mie is the same, extinction, actually it's cessation, and the way is Tao. But under the Pali translation, it is actually samudaya. Dukkha, samudaya. Dukkha, you know, is suffering, the first noble truth of suffering. Then, second noble truth is cause of arising of suffering, that's why samudaya. That's why you got paticca, samudaya. You understand? Dependent, originating. So samudaya is originating. So origination of suffering. Then you have nirodha. Nirodha is cessation. It's not extinction. Extinct is like no more. But cessation is the form of mind cease. Completely the fire creates cease. Then you have marga. Marga is the path, the Noble Eightfold Path, the path. So within the desire realms are eight of these. So this one is their Mahayana way of expressing it. Patience regarding the phenomena involved in suffering. Wisdom regarding the phenomena involved in suffering. Then he repeat for the cause of suffering or accumulation. Then repeat for cessation or they call extinction. Then again for the path. Patient regarding the phenomena involved in the path, then wisdom regarding all this. Then the form rhyme means they have the three world, sensual world, form world, and the formless world. So sensual world is kamaloka, form world is rupaloka, then the formless is arupa loka. So the form rhyme and formless rhyme, they also have eight. So same. Subsequent patience regarding suffering, subsequent wisdom regarding suffering, and repeat for the other three. Then the 16 minds are all located in the rhyme where there is attachment to mark. At the 15 of the 16 minds, subsequent patience regarding the way view delusion are cut off. That point is classified as inclination towards the first fruit and is called the way of non-interruption. When one completely attained the 16 mind, subsequent wisdom regarding the way, that is certification to the first fruit of arahantship or first stage of enlightenment. It is called a way of liberation. For at that point, delusion is completely severed and liberated. Liberation is obtained. So this is Mahayana way of describing. The first three stages of enlightenment or sainthood, they call it arahantship, called fruit position, are similar to unripened fruits on a tree. The fourth stage, the attainment of arahantship, is called the way position and correspond to the ripe or harvested fruit. Here again they go and interpret it differently. According to Theravada tradition, you remember? Every stage you have path and fruition. So this one they go and like, is it like your fruit, first stage, maybe just form, no? Then it starts to develop, the second stage. Then the third stage, it starts to like want to ripen already. Then the fourth stage around, ripen already. So they try to give the analogy as this. But actually it's not like that. Because according to the Buddha, every stage, there is a path and friction. So this path and friction I explained before. Anybody can recall what is the path? When you are on the path, means what? Yeah, you have a glimpse of it, but the understanding is not stable yet, understand? You have not realized the friction, but you already actually have the understanding. But the moment you stabilize the understanding, then it's like it becomes friction. Friction means you already have a very clear understanding of what this thing is. But even at the path, the moment you have a glimpse, that delusion is gone. But you cannot share with people. You cannot explain what this thing is. You know what it is, but you cannot have the stability or understanding to explain them. But when you have the friction, means you already very stable, then you can explain what this thing is. So every stage is the same of all the four stages of sainthood: sotapan, sakadagami, anagami, and arahantship, arahantaship. Then we read on. The first fruit is called the position of the way of seeing. The second and third fruit are called position of the way of cultivation. And the fourth fruit is called the position of the way of no study, means beyond study. No need to cultivate anymore. They call it asika. Sika and asika. Sikas are those who are still under training. The first fruit is that of sotapan, a Sanskrit word which means one who has entered the flow or the path. He opposed the flow of common peoples. Six das, you know, the six sandal, the six type of sensual desire and ill will, and enters the flow of the sage, Dhamma nature. Entering the flow means entering the state of accomplished sage, means sainthood of the Theravada tradition of small vehicle. Sakyamuni Buddha asked Subhati if a sotapan who has certified to the first fruit of the small vehicle of Theravada sainthood or sagehood can have the thought that he has obtained the fruit of sotapan. Subhati replied that the sotapan could not have such a thought. Although he is called one who has entered the flow, he has not entered anything. One who has certified to the first fruit is not turned by the six das. He can see form and not be confused. He can perceive smell, sound, smell, taste, tactile object and mental construct and not be attached to any of them. Because he is not attached, he is given the title one of the first fruit or one who has entered the flow. Nevertheless, that is merely a name, not an actual substance. Therefore, a sotapan cannot think that he has obtained the fruit of sotapan. So this one, you read and read and read, you won't understand right there. Here is all word, they are trying to play with word. The actual understanding is, because as a sotapan, you must understand what a sotapan is. Because he has severed the first three fetters, remember? Maybe I write on the whiteboard. The first factor is what? Self-delusion. 10 factors that bind the living being, preventing you from becoming enlightened. Sakaya Diti, or self-delusion. The moment he has penetrated this, he will know that the five aggregate of form and mind, the first aspect, and second aspect is not him. That's why if it's not him, he will not be deluded anymore. He will know that this form of mind, which is connected to the nature, when you develop the meditation, the silent mind, and that one is the eternal nature, the unconditioned. And that one is not a person too. That's why you cannot call that a me or I, because that one is the unconditioned, cannot come out and live life. But through that glimpse of enlightenment, that cessation of form and mind, this first stage of sainthood or sotapan, he will straight away realize that the five aggregate of form and mind are impermanent, leading to suffering, empty and non-self, not a permanent anjay. Then he realized that these two aspects, first and second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind, the first aspect is the human being. This is the first aspect as a human being. Because this human being also got five aggregate. He got a consciousness. Consciousness. Which is trapped inside. And this consciousness is what your mind is all about. Mundane mind. Yeah? So this mind has four aggregate. Feeling. Perception. Perception. Activity of mind or activity of mind or sankara, then consciousness. So here four. Then you have a physical body. That's why this is the form. So this one plus this four, 1 + 4 give you 5. That's why the five aggregate of form and mind. Then the second aspect is, at this mind level, upon contact with the external sense object or sense data, you arise sense door consciousness. Four aggregate of mind plus the mental form, the sense data that you bring into mind through perception, through this aggregate. This aggregate brings the mental form. Mental form into the mind. So this mental form together with this four add up 1 + 4. Again you have the five mental aggregate of form and mind. That's why this one is the second aspect. So this sotapan that realized the first stage of sainthood, he will understand that this form and mind is not him. Because this one is impermanent, dependent, originating. The element goes the way of nature. Then consciousness, because they are mundane mind, condition arising, come and go, come and go. But the nature is still there. When feeling pass away, you didn't die. Perception pass away, you didn't die. Mind state pass away, you didn't die. Thinking arise and pass away, you didn't die. Consciousness arise and pass away, you didn't die. That's why they are impermanent, lead to suffering. And it's not you, because if it's you, when they disappear, you should die with it. Then the question is, during meditation, if they are not you, how come it arise in you? When you meditate into it, when you go through cessation, when you silence your mind insight into phenomena, you will understand that they are dependent originating, condition arising. Causal phenomena, like what the Buddha said under the dependent origination, dwelling. That's why paticca samuppada is very important to the awakening.
So this is the actual explanation. Okay? Because the word make you very confused. So when you understand that this is not you, then it becomes easy. Then you use it to live life, to cultivate, to develop whatever you want to develop. But this one is not you. That's why it will not have this delusion. It will not go and think that I am enlightened. I am a sotapan. Then you contradict yourself. Self-delusion, first factor you have not cleared. Now you can see. Yeah? Yeah. Because the moment you clear this, this self-delusion is no more. Yeah. But this one is not easy to clear. A lot of people thought, well, are they already sotapan? Because they say, I know this is not me, non-self. But every time say, karmically conditioned. Not like that. This theory, knowledge. But you have to realize it, insight into it. Then when you really have that understanding, you really completely different. You know this fellow really not you. Then whatever happened, you very clear. Then you understand the conventional truth and the ultimate truth. Conventional truth is you have to interact within the existential world. You have to use word, you have to use concept, idea. You have to communicate. Yeah. That's why within the conditioned world, you have the Four Noble Truths, you have the Dhamma, you have old age, sickness and death, birth and all those things. But that one pertains to the five aggregate of form and mind. That one doesn't involve you. But the ultimate truth is different. Ultimate truth is the unconditioned. That's why when you realize true emptiness, the unconditioned, then you realize the unconditioned got no word, no concept. That's why he know you, he know me. No Four Noble Truth. No one born, no one sick, no one die. Then no mark. There is no cultivator. There is no living being to save. There is no Dhamma to receive or teach. So all this, the one that have gone through the whole of the arising of the awakening, they will understand this very clearly, and there is no more doubt. Okay? So just try to follow whatever you can. Then we will read on. Oh, so fast, almost 10 o'clock. Okay, we read on. The second part of the sutta says, Subhati, what do you think? Can a Sakadagami have the thought? Again, this is the same, repeat. After Sakyamuni Buddha spoke about the first fruit, he knew that many people would wonder if the first fruit and the second fruit were different, whether the first fruit have no thought of certifying to the fruit, but the stage of the second fruit did have such a thought. One who has certified to the first stage of sainthood, should not be arahantship, has seven more births and death to undergo. This one, they have to make it more clear, because here, seven birth means within the sensual realm. Maximum, not always seven, maximum seven means you can only come back maximum seven times to the sensual realm. So if within any of this coming back, let's say you hit anagami, then no more, finish. That's why King Saka very smart. He wants to make sure he got seven times to enjoy out there. He don't want to hit Sakadagami so fast. That's why he prefers to stay at Sotapanashi. Then he is born seven times in the heaven and seven times among men. Not seven times in the heaven and seven times among men. Maximum seven births, either in the heavens or the sensual realm of the human world. But they won't go down to the four woeful state. Minimum their birth is human being. Then after that, on the second fruit, the Sakadagami return but once returner.
Can he think I have obtained the fruit of Sakadagami? So as usual, Subhati said no, because although he is said to return once, means a once returner. He actually does not have to return. He can end birth and death very suddenly. He has a choice, either to have one more birth or die. Sorry, one more birth and death. Or to progress further, certify to the third fruit and not return. The second fruit, that of a Sakadagami, is just a name and has no actual substance. Therefore, he cannot be said to have obtained anything. What could he attain? Sakadagami is just a name. So those who understand is just a word that people use it to describe their form and mind. Understand? Not? That's why the Buddha also said the disciple so and so is an arahant. He is an anagami. He is referring to the form and mind. The form and mind, yes, because it is connected with that type of wisdom. Like when you sever your first three fetters, that wisdom that is connected only has the wisdom up to that level. Then that form and mind, you can say at that level is an sotapan. A sotapan or a sakadagami or anagami or an arahant. But that one is not him. So this is all playing with words. But the actual explanation, I think Xian Hua couldn't explain, because this five degree of form and mind is not easy. I realize I haven't seen any book really write about it so clearly. Yeah. And this is the one that is the penetrative one that the Buddha meant. So this five degree of form and mind, the two aspects, if you cannot penetrate this, you cannot understand the deep meaning. I realize the rest all, they use word only. They couldn't describe it. Mm. Then the next part of the sutta is the same for anagami. Then after that, the fourth one is for an arahant. Then again, turn the next page. So what they said, no world on that one. And why? Actually, there is no Dhamma called an arahant, world on that one. If an arahant has the thought, I have attained arahantship, that would be an attachment to self, to others, to living beings, and to alive. World on that one. The Buddha said that in my attainment of the non-thrift samadhi, non-strifeful samadhi, I am the foremost among men, that I am the foremost arahant free from desire. World-honored one, I do not have the thought that I am an arahant free from desire. If I had the thought I had attained arahantship, then the world-honored one could not say Subhati is the foremost of those who delight in cultivating arana. Since Subhati actually has no practice, he is called Subhati who delights in practicing arana. So these are just the various ways where you actually can use word to describe and explain all these things. But it's still trying to use word. Mm. Then the commentary say, arahant is a Sanskrit word, has three meanings. Worthy of offering, killer of thief, without birth. This is their explanation. Worthy of offering, you know, killer of thief. He don't kill physically, understand? Here, thief refer to something else. I think it's defilement. Then they are without rebirth. Being a bhikkhu is the cause of becoming an arahant. Becoming an arahant is the result of having been a bhikkhu. In the cause, he is a mendicant. In the result, he is one worthy of offering of gods and men. In the cause, he is one who frightens Mara. Mara. He's a killer of thief. Mara. In the result, he is one who kills the thief of affliction. In the cause, he is one who destroys evil. In the result, he is one who is without birth. So this is a Mahayana way of explaining. The Arahant of the small vehicle of Theravada tradition kills the thief of affliction. That's why no more suffering. The Bodhisattva should not only kill the thief, but should also kill that which is not the thief. That is to say, ignorant. That's why this one play word again. Huh? At the realization of Arahantship, ignorance is not considered a thief. But at the accumulation of Bodhisattvahood, it is, because of the realization that all affliction come from ignorance. Although the Arahant has realized the position of no study, he still has... See, the Mahayana put it like that, Theravada is very angry. He still has ignorance. Even equal enlightenment bodhisattvas still have one last particle of ignorance which acts as a thief, and which bodhisattva recognizes as the greatest thief. Therefore, it is said that they must kill that which for the Arahant is not a thief. Subhati was asked if an Arahant can have a thought that he has obtained Arahantship, and he replied, no. Because although he has certified to the fruit of Arahantship, it is just a name and nothing more. Not only upon certification to the fruits of Arahantship is there no realization, but even upon attainment of Buddhahood, there is none. There is no tangible Dhamma which can be called Arahant. It is an empty name. If one thinks it exists, one has an attachment to Dhamma and has not realized the emptiness of phenomena. So again, this one is using word. Eh? If an Arahant did have the thought that he has obtained Arahantship, he would be attached to self, others, living being, and alive. He would not have realized emptiness of self or of phenomena, nor would he have obtained Arahantship. The thought of attaining Arahantship carries with it the mark of self, which in turn produces its partner, the mark of others. Have the pair phenomena of self and others, having the pair phenomena of self and others creates the mark of living being, which in turn lead to the mark of alive. He would therefore be attached to the four marks. Subhati again spoke to the Buddha, saying, "Well honored one." The Buddha said, "I have obtained the non-strife samadhi." Strife refers to debating and fighting. Huh? The six patriarchs spoke of this. Debating, thought of victory and defeat. That's a right and wrong, no point. Stand in contradiction to the way. Give rise to the four mark mind. How can samadhi be obtained? So when you are very clear about the cultivation, you will not have this type of mind. You will not try to be right or wrong. You will not argue. You will not contend. You will not debate. Then we move on. In cultivating the way, one should not involve oneself in competition, fighting to be first or second. People who cultivate the way should be like water. You know what is water or not? Accord and flow. Water never resists anything. It will just find its way through whichever that can lead it to. And it pervades everywhere. Superior goodness is like water. Water benefits the mind right thing and does not contend with them. It flows to places which repel mankind. And thus, it approximates the way. Now, this is a very good description. You can accord and flow, you will have the way, you will have the Dhamma. So all these are descriptions, so we skip them. Lao Tzu was a transformation body of the Venerable Mahakasapa. Oh, cannot be, Lao Tzu came before Mahakasapa. That's why sometimes I also don't know how this one come about. Yes, Lao Tzu was before the Buddha. He was earlier, before the Buddha. Lao Tzu. So, Mahakasapa was when Sakyamuni Buddha come out. So, maybe he knows. Before he become Mahakasapa, he was Lao Tzu, I think. I don't know. But he said Laozi was a transformation body of Venerable Mahakasapa. I don't know. Anyway, not important. When the Buddha entered the world, he saw the living being in China committing many offenses and did not conduct themselves in accordance with propriety. So he sent Laozi, Confucian, and Yang Hui to China to teach and transform living beings. All three were transformation body of Bodhisattva. Ah, that one I agree. They are Bodhisattva. Laozi introduced the concept of the unconditioned to the Chinese people. If one can understand the unconditioned Dhamma, one can then come to the understand that which is not unconditioned. The Buddha Dhamma speaks of that which is unconditioned and yet not unconditioned. So this is non-duality. The sixth patriarch said, debating, thought of victory and defeat, stands in contradiction to the way. Supposing cultivating the way, you should go south, but because you like to argue, you go north instead. Perhaps you should go east, but you rebel and go west. When you argue, you are in opposition to the way, giving rise to the four marks, mind, meaning producing the mark of a self, mark of others, mark of living beings, and mark of a life. How can samadhi be obtained? The non-strive for samadhi has no thought of victory or defeat. So the Buddha said that Subhati is the foremost arahat apart from desire. Living beings are plagued with all kinds of greed and desire. Sum up of the list of five desire. Desire for wealth, for form, for fame, for food, and for sleep. Whatever one likes amounts to an object of greed and desire. Upon certifying to the non-strifeful samadhi, there is no greed or desire of any kind. One is not greedy for clothes, food, or a good place to live. All longing cease. That is what is meant by foremost free from desire. Separating from desire, one obtains the non-strifeful samadhi and become pure. If one has not left desire, he cannot obtain the non-strifeful samadhi, the bliss of purity. Subhati said to the Buddha, well honored one, I do not have the thought that I am one who had obtained the non-strifeful samadhi, or that I have certified to arahantship, or that I am number one among men, foremost arahant, free from desire. Why? If I had that thought, I could not be pure. I could not be called pure. I could not be said to have left desire, and could not be called one who does not fight or contend. Well honored one, you should not then say that Subhati is one who practices arana, that is one who practices pure conduct. Why? Because if I had such a thought, just that would be contentious and impurity and would not be freedom from desire. That too would be a false thought. But because I am actually without practice, I do not actually do anything. I am not attached to anything. I am not attached to self or to Dhamma. Since I do not arrogantly say I have obtained arahantship, I am pure and do not fight. I am free from desire. For that reason, the Buddha said that I am foremost arahant, free from desire. But if I had such thought, the Buddha could not speak in that way. So Subhati, who practices arana, is nothing but a false word. As an arana practitioner, Subhati likes to cultivate pure conduct. However, there is no fixed or actual substance, no thing which he has obtained. Although he has certified to the four fruit of arahantship, he has actually obtained nothing. Those who look cannot see it. Those who listen cannot hear it. There isn't anything at all. So this one will make you very confused if you cannot penetrate the Dhamma. They are trying to explain things to you from both angle, understand? From the conditioned world and the unconditioned world. That's why you become very confused. One moment is it, don't have this, don't have that. Then the next moment is it, got this, got that. Then arahant and all that. Then he say, if there is such thing, then he is not an arahant. So all this is confusing because they explain from the unconditioned and the conditioned. It's just like the Buddha said, five daily contemplation, the last one. You are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned, supported by your karma. You are what you are because... Then you will ask yourself the question, how can the Buddha say that? He say, he know you, he know me, anatta, non-self. Then, somehow, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned. What is going on? You surely confused. Then, he somehow say, anatta, non-self, but got arahan, got sotapan, got sakadagami, got anagami. Then, got living being to save. Because they are actually approaching from the conditioned and the unconditioned. It's just like Hatsuta, in true emptiness, all this don't exist. When you understand, there is no contradiction. That's why when Krishnamurti say the real meditation is effortless, no thought, no effort, then you go and challenge him. You say, how can there be no effort? Sakyamuni Buddha teach Noble Eightfold Path, right effort. You say, no effort. Again, argue. Because they won't apply to the thought. The four right effort is for the thought. That's why the Buddha say, first right effort is what? To abandon the wrong thought. The word is thought that has arisen. But when it comes to cultivating wisdom, purification of mind, he never say right effort. He just advises you to cultivate heedfulness, mindfulness, aware, to insight into phenomena. So all this, you will start to develop the understanding as you cultivate. Okay, I managed to finish one chapter. Very good. So you got any question, you can ask. I have a drink. Do you have any question? So far clear or not? This chapter is a bit difficult to understand. But more important is if you can grasp the concept. Of the five aggregate of form and mind, it will be a lot easier. You got any question, you can put up your hand. They can pass you the cordless mic. Otherwise, we meditate for 10 minutes. Then see after that got question or not. Okay, you silent your mind. 10 minutes. Okay, I also want to meditate for a while.
So that's already 10 minutes. So any question after your silent meditation? Ajay, give me the cut.
And the cut.
On the light. Anybody got any question? You got no question, maybe I will read this to you. This is a card from, I think, the nun, Venerable Sun Yin, passed to me by Joyce. I think it's from her to our group. Then there's also a, I don't know what you call this. This one is also one of the, I don't know whether it was Korean painting or what, or Kuan Yin and Kuan Yin and two other beings. She addressed this to Brother Teo and all Kayanamitas, or not all, and the Kayanamita that visited her, I think. Thank you for coming to visit this little center. Such a joy for me to have met you all, many for the first time. Your generosity of heart and body is indeed memorable after such a sleepless night and cold. Wow, this word is difficult to read. Sleepless night and cold. I don't know what this word is. And cold. There's another word, I don't know what is it. You still share smile and warmth. Many blessings to you all, and enjoy the rest of your travel. May the Dhamma guide you, your every action, and your heart stays warm and open with metta. Qigong. She calls her Qigong. Then he said, please accept a small gift to put in your center, a scroll. Oh, the Buddha with two bodhisattva, one is Kuan Yin, and the other one is Prajna Paramita, wisdom. Oh, okay. Then he somehow got a message. All the devas and deities rejoice, and in the light of the full moon, they sing praise for the Dhamma being shared to all. This is because the cut in front has a deva with the guitar. Not guitar, this one is the Chinese musical instrument. Anyway, you all must be curious about this one. I came back, I open up and have a look. Come, somebody must help me. Try to open it up. Two person, one person cannot too long. No, 2%. I think this one is Huayan Sanson, isn't it? Huayan Sanson, yeah. So, Sakyamuni Buddha, Kuan Yin, and that one, Da Shi Zi, isn't it? Da Shi Zi. So this one is very beautiful. Fo Guang what? What is the Chinese word? Fo Guang Pu Zhao Samo? Fo Guang Pu Zhao Samo? What are the other three words? Oh, her signature. Oh, the painter's signature. Oh. This one is very nice, this painting. Anybody wants this painting? Huh?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. During the Katina, huh? Okay, we will do that. We wrap it up. We bring it during November, our November Katina trip. Then we all offer, roll it back. We all offer it to Achan Achalo during the Katina. Yun Chan Lao. He loved this one. From Melbourne. From Melbourne, it come to Malaysia. Then Malaysia go Thailand. Then after Thailand, I don't know where it go. Anyway, we rejoice because there is affinity to have all this. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And very kind of her to have such wholesomeness to offer this to us. That's why I want to say I have enough thing already. I don't want to hang some more. So that monk poster was my daughter's one. She went to Cambodia. Then she brought this one back. He said, Daddy, this is nice. So she showed it to me. Oh, I said, yeah, very nice. He said, I want to frame it out. I said, can you frame it out? Then he even decided where to hang. That's how is there. Actually, I don't want to hang all this. Too many already. Those that come because of condition is okay. Then after that, I will give it away. And a lot of these are for a few months. After that, they will take it back. But there are some permanent here already. But later on, it has to go somewhere. I don't know where it will go to. So whatever it is, if there is condition. This one quite nice there. The funny thing is, why 11? 11 monk. Maybe the artist like to paint 11. Or he saw 11 monk walking. Then he started to paint. They say easier to paint the back. No need to draw the eye. That's also. So we all, I hope those who went for the trip, you don't mind, we make the decision, give to Achan Achalo, I think that is the best. So we should actually rejoice that we can receive this and we can bring it along during Katina this coming November. And we shall ask Joyce together with Michael and Sito, present it to Achan when we are there. So we rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, 10:30, no question, we end. Got question also, you have to write it down. Next time you better write it down. I realize most of you are very shy. But if you can ask good question, it will be very useful. Because at Wu Ping Ching, sometimes the question are quite good. And because of that, we got condition. Last Sunday, the Wu Ping Ching, you better listen to it. It's a very good sharing, a very good talk. It's on direct seeing, like a comprehensive review of what the thing is. Because a lot of people cannot understand. Then I also spend more time to explain the essential understanding. I realize now the Dhamma you already have enough is in the Heart Sutta note, and you have in all the recording everything. Now what you need is the cultivation, the penetrative understanding and the realization. So that's why now I will not rush the explanation. I will go into it one by one to explain clearly. That day we only did the direct seeing most of the time, and they had a lot of opportunity to ask me questions. I think in that way it's better. But this one, the Diamond Sutta, is different because I had to explain. Because this is the first time I'm going through the Diamond Sutta with you, so I don't have the luxury of time to explain all these things in detail. So maybe we go through one round, then after we finish, we can focus on cultivation. Then we can go into specific, deeper understanding of the various essential Dhamma. Well, that is what is useful. If you can have that understanding, then you can put it into cultivation. You can develop it to become a part of your daily life understanding. So that part, once you penetrate, cultivation become very easy. Then you will see the benefit of it. You will come to understand it very clearly. Then when you know how to apply, there is so much joy. You can see how your life transforms, how your parami, your merits, your blessing transform, and how your life improved tremendously. Then you can see your relationship with other people, with the world, with nature, with the environment, with fellow living beings, and even with the non-humans, the animal. You become a completely different human being. Then there is so much joy within you, so much love, so much understanding. Then your mind states become very beautiful. Like I explained the other day at the Thursday class, cultivation of Dhamma is essentially developing the wisdom to become virtuous. When you have wisdom, you can have real virtue. Before you have wisdom, you cannot have real virtue. You may try to practice loving kindness, practice to be compassionate, practice to be generous. Cannot. That one is still thought-based. But when you develop the wisdom, your virtue arises naturally through that wisdom, through that understanding. And it's completely opposite of what living beings do, I tell you. That's why you must penetrate the Dhamma and cultivate it. Then develop the understanding. Then after that, your understanding will transform you completely. And virtue become something like very natural to you. You don't have to learn to be virtuous. You don't have to practice to become virtuous. All those are still at the thought level. Virtue according to you, good according to you, is not born of understanding. When you have the wisdom and you understand, then you will realize the absence of evil is good. Virtue is when you are incapable of negativity. Then you realize everything you do, there is no more self-interest. There is no more craving and desire. It's all for the good of the many. When condition is there, you manifest. When there is no condition, you don't do anything. And everything you do, there is no weighing and all those things. It's there and then, spontaneously, you will know what to do because you act according to wisdom, act according to Noble Eightfold Path. You don't act according to memory, your conditioning, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your insecurity and all those things. So when you keep on recalling all this and act, you cannot act. Well, these are all your fear, your scars of memory, your phobia, your selfishness, your conditioning, your views and your opinion of things. That's why your action is all. You act out of fear, out of greed, out of insecurity, selfishness, views and opinion. So that action is, according to Krishnamurti, you are not acting at all. That's why acting according to memory is not acting at all. You have to act according to wisdom, understanding, Noble Eightfold Path. Then your action become pure, not subject to all those things. Then you will know what action is all about. You will understand what the free mind is all about, what the true mind with the wisdom connected to it is all about. Then you know how to live. And life become beautiful after that. Okay? Yeah. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Now we will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merits. Then you make your aspiration. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Father also, A.M.B.'s mother. Thank you for reminding me. I am a mother-in-law, yes, sadhu. I know. Oh, I see you. Huh? Sadhu. Very good. We rejoice. Huh? Okay. We will invoke the sharing of merits and transfer of merits. Let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed through our 2 hour plus of Dhamma sharing together with the puja offering, our pre and post puja, which we are going to do after this. May all this wholesomeness arise the causes and conditions for Ajahn Ajahn's father. Is it Mel Hansen? The name is Mal Hansen. Mal Hansen. Who is now, I think, under intensive care. May he have the causes and conditions to recover to good health if there is a possibility, if there are conditions for it. If not, may arise the causes and conditions for him to be peaceful, to go through all this with the minimal of suffering. And if there can be causes and conditions for him to have more and more peace, more and more joy, to be at peace with whatever that come due to the natural process of getting old, getting sick, and maybe slowly, slowly facing potential separation. May it bring about whatever causes and conditions for him to have a peaceful mind, to see through all these things, and to develop the good causes and conditions for whatever future good rebirth he has to go through the what they call stage of separation of consciousness from that form. And may it also bring forth good state of mind so that he can have a good rebirth. And may it also pave the way for him to have the good rebirth in whatever realm or existence he may take after the immediate passing away from this very life. But if there are conditions for him to recover, then let it manifest. Then at the same time, we would like to delegate and transfer this marriage to help arise the causes and conditions for Sister Ingbi's mother-in-law to have a very good and speedy and peaceful recovery from her post-surgery, post-pelvic surgery. She is recuperating now quite well, I was told just now by Sister Ingbi, already transferred out of ICU or intensive care unit or CCU. So now he's in the normal ward. Then we would like to thank all Kayamita earlier on who has sent their loving kindness, metta, love and compassion for her well-being. I saw on the WhatsApp a lot of this. We really rejoice and would like to thank them all. In the same way, tonight, we will invoke the power of blessings, merits and wholesomeness that we have developed and cultivated together. So may all this wholesomeness to be shared by all. Then whoever who can receive them for the good of the many, let them manifest. So we will now recite the sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata ca bumata devanaga mahindika punyantang anamoditwa cirang rakan tuloka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata ca mehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share this merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transform merits to departed ones. อิดังเมญะทินังโหตุสุขิตาหอนตุเนี่ยประโยยะทินังโหตุสุขิตาหอนตุเนี่ยประโยอิดังเมญะทินังโหตุสุขิตาหอนตุเนี่ยประโย Let this merits accrue to our departed relatives and may they all too be well and happy always. Then we will invoke the blessing for the nation.Devo vasatukalena sasa sampati heto cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu namniko. May the rainfall in due season, may there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the government of the day, the king and the ruler be righteous. Now you make your aspiration.อิมินาปุญญังคาเมนามามิบาลาสมากโมสตังสมากโมโหตุยาวานิวานาปัตติยา By the grace of this merit that we have thus acquired, may we not follow the foolish and the heedless, but only the wise and the enlightened one until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu.Sadhu, Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy one. Then after that, you can dedicate this marriage to both Achan Achalo's father, Mel Hansen, and Sister Imbi's mother-in-law. Then after that, we will end. Okay.
Thank you very much for your